Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guns.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this soundtrack.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance.
Okay,
we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot del H. Goes based on the data you had prior to LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country in Shingle Springs, California, this is your host, John Almada. Okay, Sunday night, and, got an interesting show tonight, but, Arizona. Yeah. Okay, how about that, guys? Am I not breaking up now? Hopefully I'm not breaking up. Let me see if you guys are hearing me now. Oh, my goodness. Maybe I need to dial in with the cell phone. Huh, I'm going to switch over. Hang on, guys. Okay, a little bit of tuning. Is that better, guys? Hopefully we've got that solved. I had what I think to be the problem solved here. I had a switch that I hadn't set right. So if one of you can let me know. No, it doesn't sound good. Does, which is it, Kathy? Sounds great or no? One of those days. Come on, type fast to somebody. Come on, tell me if you can hear me out there. Okay, good. Finally, Anastasia, thank you. Anyway, a little bit of a technical glitch there. I dial in on two Skype lines, and what I had is the phone line I had not on mute. So I don't think that was working out. Anyway, we're going to recover from that. Tonight we have author Heather Woodward is going to be on. She's a clairvoyant author, as I said before, an accidental medium. And psychometrist, we're big on psychometry on the show. Since 1996, she's performed psychic tarot readings, medium sessions, life coaching consultations, and the psychic profiling, and helping others with her God-given gifts over the last 12 years. And she's been interviewed on television, film, radio, and print for her knowledge in the paranormal and psychic development. So we're going to be having her on here real soon. And if you're interested in her, her website is www.heatherwoodward.net. So we'll make sure to feature that. And so we'll be seeing her on at the, the 12 or at the 8:30 hour, 8:30 Pacific time here. I do have an interesting article here to share with you guys. Let me go ahead. This is not in our normal stuff we do, but interesting article out on Fox News today. It was newly released UFO files from the UK government. They declassified a whole bunch of files and put these out for people to see. And I just put the link out in the chat room. And that is some pretty good stuff. You can actually download dating back to, I believe, 1966, if I look here on the website. Here's all their PDFs and original reports of UFO reports taken in the UK all the way up until the current day. So it's really interesting to see governments starting to open up a little bit about this stuff. I downloaded them and took a look around, and it's real detailed, but if you have an interest in this kind of thing, go check it out. And I see Heather's in the room. I'm not sure if she's dialed in, so if she is, I'll bring her on a little bit early, but we'll get through our news real quickly and then see if she's in, because I do see a caller in on Skype, and that probably is her. So I will go ahead and go forward there. All right, Psychic Connection, that's me. Good. All right, thank you. Appreciate that. Let's see. We're going to go ahead and since psychometry is such a big topic with us, and we love doing that, and Heather is a very accomplished psychometrist, it'll be interesting to learn some more from her. I've done it myself. It's been my little specialty as I've come through the years. I've been able to read things and touch things and sense things about them, but it'll be neat to talk with somebody else who does this. So, she does this probably a lot more than I do on a daily basis, so it'll be really great to hear what she has to say. But what I did want to share is a link here. It's a little bit of just a real primer. It's not meant to be the be-all, end-all of how to do psychometry, but as you know, we've been doing the shows with psychometry and kind of letting people kind of just go about it any way they want. And I kind of knew that, the last few sessions, we weren't going to do it all that well, although we've been getting some pretty good hits. The colors seem to be coming in pretty well. And, a couple of direct hits. Kathy hit on some things, and I picked up a couple of things that were being sent to me. And it's really something we want to explore and continue going forward with. But I wanted to share that link so that when we do some of the future shows, you can go out here to ehow.com and hit their how to develop psychometry ability. And at least you have a foundation, something to look at. And there's plenty of websites out there and all sorts of good books on the topic. And I'm sure Heather's going to teach us some more about it and talk throughout the show with some of that, as well as her many ghost cases that she's been on. She has written a book. I'll read that on the bio when we introduce her in. So we'll talk about that. Phil Harris. Yesterday I did a little bit of a dedication to Phil Harris of Deadliest Catch, somebody I have a lot of respect for, and he passed early part of February or late January, and he is evidently to the very end. I just wanted to share this. He suffered a stroke in January while he was offloading crabs from the Cornelia Marie, his ship, in St. Paul, Alaska, and he'd been in an Anchorage hospital until he died, he was 53 years old. One of the things that was very amazing was when he woke up out of an induced coma, he actually was asked for the production crews to come in, and he wanted them to film right up to the end. And he basically shared, he couldn't talk correctly, kind of like what happened to my father with his stroke. But he ended up letting them know, let it be known, he wanted them to see the show through all the way to the end with him. And I think that they went ahead and agreed that that would be done. So the Discovery Channel did do that. And basically in April, when the new season shows go on, Phil will be seen there and right up through to the all the events that happened with his passing. So I'm really glad to see that because, this kind of thing happens every day to families. And, I went through it with my father, and thank God he's still here. He had his birthday yesterday, so I dedicated the other half of the show to Dad yesterday. But Captain Phil is a great guy, and he's still, probably out there helping the other crabbers up there in Alaska. And I just think he's a fantastic human being. So, that said, check out Deadliest Catch. It's really a good show, and they've got some great stuff. Let's check the chat room. We've got, again, I'm going to just, I'm kind of revisiting here, but let's see who we got. We have Anastasia, Kathy's Distant Echoes. Colors Glow, that's a new one. I like that. That's a good name. Greeny, very cool. Guest 7160, an HCP Pam. And Heather is Psychic Connection, and she has a show here on Blog Talk Radio also, and I did get a chance to listen to her, and she's quite good. So, you know, give her show a listen. We'll plug that for her and find out more about that. So I'm going to go ahead, and she's still connected. That's great. So we're all set to go. Heather is an author, a clairvoyant, an accidental medium, as I said before, and a psychometrist. That sounds so really – it sounds like you need to be on a couch. When you say that, I'm a psychometrist. Sit down. Let's talk about this. Since 1996, she's performed the tarot readings, paranormal investigations, and psychic profiling, helping others with her born and given gifts for over 12 years. She's the author of Ghosts of Central Arizona, a book about her personal experiences in some of the most haunted and supernatural locations in Sedona, Jerome, Cottonwood, and the surrounding areas. And as a matter of fact, I'll let you guys know on something. I'm actually, when I retire in about 6 years, that is where I want to live, is right in that area. I've been looking at northern Arizona really hard, and I'm going to be actually going down that way this year. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful state, and I love Arizona. So I'm going to make it where I hunt ghosts when I retire out, and I'll be leaving California for there. So anyway, I'm here. Where am I at? Here we go. Heather produced, edited, and directed the paranormal documentary Dead House, which regularly hits the top 20 best-selling DVD ranks on Amazon in the supernatural category. And Dead House is about a haunted house with a chilling history of witchcraft located in La Conchita, California. The film was featured in the 2008 Dead of Winter Festival hosted by Troy Taylor. Heather is the host of The Psychic Connection, a weekly online radio show exploring such topics as psychic development, tarot, divination, witchcraft, spirituality, and all things supernatural. The one-hour show airs on Sunday nights at 6:30 p.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio. Over the years, Heather has been interviewed as a guest on television, film, radio, and print for her knowledge in the paranormal and psychic development areas. She teaches a practical psychic development class at Pima Community College in Tucson, Arizona, and writes an online metaphysical and paranormal column on the Tucson Examiner. And she's one busy lady, this gal. So, and I did listen to her show, and she's also a great hostess on the radio. So let's get her on here. And I'm going to click that, and I take it this is Heather. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
It's me. Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
hello?
I can hear you now.
Oh,
yep.
Okay, good. I was trying to call in earlier, and Skype was being glitchy, so I hope I hear you okay. I hear you okay, fine.
Okay, good. Yeah, I see you're on Skype
okay.
Like I use. We're Skyping.
Yeah, so
Skyping.
But Skype just gets glitchy sometimes, and so I never know.
You know, it's funny. I'll share a little wisdom with you. I actually have found out how, if you're dialing in on through your computer, right?
Yes. Yes.
I can send you an article that'll help you tune your computer so Skype will work better.
Oh, that's awesome. Please send that to me, because I'm always having trouble with it. So.
Yeah, it turns out there's some specific tuning settings that you can do to turn off certain services in XP or Windows 7. And what will happen is it allows a little more bandwidth for Skype to do its thing. So I went through the same thing until I went through the educational process, and now I actually do all my hosting through Skype. And so, you know, I know we're going off topic here, but you know, you're a fellow host, and I'm trying to, I'll throw a little technical stuff your way and give you a hand. So, yeah, I think that'll help a bunch.
Yes, because, yeah, definitely. I use Skype a lot, and I'm always like, ah. But, yeah, I have to tell you, though, you have an awesome voice. You are like, your voice is made for radio.
Well, it's funny. So all the regulars out there know the story, but my grandfather owned KSAN out of San Francisco, and also he owned two radio stations in Missouri, and my father was a radio announcer, in his high school years, before we went into, him and I both work in the rocket business. He was retired out, and I'm coming up on my retirement, but I've hosted defense videos, safety videos for the company I work for, Aerojet, and I've done all sorts of voiceover work for them and over the years. And I got hooked on it, and when I saw Blog Talk, I knew I had to do it. So here I am, and I'm actually a little something I haven't been telling everybody. I'm setting up to do voiceover work for other shows on Blog Talk, where I can do voiceover and commercial work for some of you hosts out there who are looking to have a professional sounding bumper made up for you, things like that. So I'm doing a little work on the side, I'm pitching that. So. Anyway, but thank you very much for that. Yeah, it's good to hear that I have a radio voice, even when I'm a little bit.
You do. You definitely do. You just sound, you have that deep kind of soothing voice like you think of when you think of radio. I don't know. I was like, wow. So that's very cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking about doing some meditation tapes, too. I might be able to put people to sleep a bit. I don't know. We'll work on that. Kathy,
no, you're very soothing. I think it would be great.
You.
I think it would be awesome. You'd be like, oh, wow. I think that's, yeah.
Okay.
Very
well,
cool.
About, you are a busy lady, as I was saying. You teach at community college. You do all these different things with movies. You've written a book. You've got, the psychometry you're doing, the Tarot, which I love Tarot. And I got a couple of decks myself, and I like divination. And a little bit of witchcraft too, So you've got a pretty rounded experience of the world there, lady.
I do. People go, well, how do you do it? I'm like, well, I don't have a real job, so this is it. So, and there's 7 days in a week, and I don't have days off, so it works out. Like I write my blog once a week, and then the next day I write in my Examiner page. So I do that once a week, and then. And then I market my book in the mornings, and then I write my other book at nights, and I don't go to bed till 1 a.m, and then I get up around 10 or 11, and it just works out, and then I do readings. I do readings on, like, Keen and a couple other places for phone, and so I do that throughout the day, too, while I'm doing the other stuff. So you just kind of juggle it, and if that's all you do for a living, then it works. So.
Well, how did it come to be that you got into all of this? I mean, this is what I always start off with guests is, let's go back to the very beginning when you first discovered that you were maybe a little bit different and had some of the different abilities. So let's take it back to there, and then we can work forward.
It's interesting that you asked me that, because I was talking to my I'm actually teaching right now at the college on Fridays, and my class, because When I teach classes, it's really about them, so I give them a very, very short bio. Yeah, I've been doing this for a long time, blah, blah, blah. Now let's get to you. And one of my students said, so tell me your story. How did you get involved in this? And my sister is in my class right now, and so I got a totally different perspective of our childhood from her. And it's funny, because we both said the same thing, though, was that when growing up, when we were little, the paranormal was not paranormal. It was something that just was normal to us. We always lived in haunted houses. We always we were always kind of in it, because my parents are both psychic. My dad is clairvoyant. He sees things. He's very in tune with it, even though he's Baptist and denies it. He still never said it wasn't there. He just didn't talk about it. And my mom is very psychic too, and so if our house wasn't haunted, it would be haunted by the time we got there, because it was like a little beacon. And so she said the same thing. It was just funny to get her perspective on it, because she said the same thing I did. It wasn't frowned upon, but it wasn't really talked about either, so we just assumed as it was normal. And the story I always tell is, and she remembers the same thing, which is so funny, because she remembers it so clearly, like I do. We had a house when I was like 9 or 10, and she must have been 4 or 5. And there was somebody or something that paced in the kitchen all the time at night. And I remember sitting between the living room and the kitchen in the little walkway and sitting and listening to the footsteps, trying to figure out who it was. I knew it was a man, I knew it was a he. I just wondered what he was doing there and why he liked the kitchen so much. And so, and my parents never, ever said, don't do that, that's scary, nothing like that. It just, they just assumed that's what how life was and kind of just went with it. So, I don't know, my mom, I lived with my mom more than I lived with my dad, but with my mom, she, I mean, we had doors opening and closing in our house now. We can never keep the, whenever I go over there, we can never keep the cabinets closed in the kitchen. They always open. You close them, they open by themselves, lights go on and off. It's just how it is. And so I guess that's how I got involved in it, is because it's just has been part of my life since I was a kid.
Huh. And so when did you find out that not everybody had these things happening?
That's funny because I think it was probably in high school, by the time I was about 15 or 16, I realized, you know, you spend the night at other people's houses and stuff, and you go and you realize that there's this whole other world out there. Somebody once said, oh, so you had a sheltered life. And I said, well, sheltered, yes, but not in the way that most people are sheltered. I was sheltered in a whole different way. It was like we were sheltered because we thought that everybody had psychic parents and everybody had haunted houses and lots of other things too. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I went to Sunday school every Sunday until I was 12 or 13. I went to Bible school when I was in my kindergarten, first and second grade. I mean, I was immersed in the Baptist culture because that's what my dad was. But that never influenced the psychic phenomenon, the paranormal aspect of our lives. So, about 14 or 15, I think, on there.
It's funny. It sounds an awful lot like, you know, where I came up from, because it's the same kind of thing. You know, my father denies he has ability, although, you know, he did, you know, have he worked in high-energy materials work, basically high-energy explosives, you know, development, things like that, and propulsion systems. And he always had a penchant for getting out of, just missing, getting blown up. And
oh, wow.
We always kind of felt he was psychic. But my mother's side are all the Scottish Highlanders, and every one of them is. And so I came by it, you know, my mother is the one who sees and what everybody's doing remotely. And we had kind of a running joke because she can also send out when everybody's supposed to come in for dinner. And so I just feel it and I go up and she just laughs. But she's got those gifts and she can see, she's kind of a medical intuitive. She can see when people are having a real problem, when no one else does.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I myself, the psychometry, which I love, you know, doing, it's a lot of fun. And, I see shadows. I see a lot of them, and sometimes I hear them too. But you know, when they're talking. But you sound like you could have been a member of the family the way you sound. I mean, same kind of setup. I mean, my goodness. Even the school. I went to catechism until I was about 12, and then they finally I finally got out of it, and I could watch cartoons again on Saturdays. So it was good.
Yeah, it's a very interesting, people say, you know, I mean, your childhood sounds like my childhood, and it's interesting because when you're raised like that, I mean, we have lots of dysfunction in our family too, but when you're raised like that, there's no such thing as limits, and that's something that I had to fight with my whole life, is that I had to learn what boundaries were, because the way that I think is so limitless, because I don't think of the other, like the underworld and all the other dimensions and stuff. I mean, I don't think of them as separate from my reality because they never have been. Nobody ever said those aren't real, you know? And I mean, my dad was so into the Loch Ness Monster, and he's like in the Shroud of Turin, and UFOs, and we used to go UFO hunting when we were kids, and just stuff like that. I mean, and he was into archaeology and the pyramids and the man on Mars and all this stuff. And so I got really, really into that stuff. I mean, he would take us to the library and make us read this stuff, and just to say, look, there's something beyond what's here. And I think he was trying to do it in a way to show us that God was something that we could see in the world. But then I sort of took it and manipulated it and said, well, I believe in God, but I also believe in this limitless, you know, world, and took it in the other direction. But it's very interesting to me. But
that's it's funny because you know, real similar experiences. You know, my background with you know, my father, you know, doing the rocket science and things like that. You know, my mother, you know, touchy feely earth people, and everything was, you know, from the heart. And I grew up very confused, very, very confused. But the thing I always was shown is that there is always another way to do something. There's always another way to see something. And so, you know, the psychic development in the household was just considered a given, and it was never frowned, you know, on or never discouraged. And so, you know, and it's something that I'm kind of happy to see my sister's children who are now grown up, and my niece who just went off to the U.S. Air Force and is in boot camp right now. Oh gosh, she's getting a real dose there, but she has the ability, and she doesn't realize it quite yet. So I've been kind of waiting for the day she finally realizes something, and she talks to her crazy uncle about some of this stuff. So I'm kind of ready for her. But you know, it sounds like you came from a really loving home and that accepted these things.
Yeah, I mean, I came from a very weird family, so you know, we have our share of dysfunction. Like I said, it wasn't all, you know, happiness, but it was a little tragic. But I mean, I can honestly say that with all the bad, there was a lot of good in it, because it did kind of shape me into who I am. But I guess that's everybody in some ways. Well,
What was this ghost that you were talking about with the walking that happened, with the walking back and forth in the kitchen? Did you ever find out who this guy was?
No. Like I said, I was really young. I probably was in fourth or fifth grade. I was like 9 or 10. So I never really understood it. That was a very strange house, let me tell you. And there was lots of weird things that happened in that house, and we never could figure it out. There was one room particularly in the back that was our playroom, that, because I have three brothers and sisters, so we had a playroom, and it wasn't a very big house, it was just, we had so many toys, and so that room in particular was very strange and very weird, and my dad had some instances where he actually had things light on fire, like books and stuff, like just kinetic energy. That room, it was an old 20s house, so the bathroom had like one of those claw tubs, and there was two doors that went into the bathroom, one from one bedroom and one from the other bedroom, and there was a frosted piece of glass in that went from our playroom into the bathroom, and it wasn't a very big frosted piece of glass. If you can imagine the old 20s doors with just the one square piece of glass, so it was like ornate. Sometimes... Yeah. In there, you could see the outline of a man etched into the glass. And I remember as a kid, and he had a beard like an old, like Lutheran, like 1600s, around there, that Puritan look. And I remember it, and I asked later on, like this was a few months ago, I asked my dad, I said, Dad, is it true that there was a man in the glass? He says, oh, you remember that? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, it used to freak your mom and me out, because we're always wondering if you'll be afraid of it. And I said, no, we never really thought anything of it. But it would be there sometimes, and it wasn't. And he said that he thought that the man in the glass was the same man that was walking in and out of the kitchen. And we never could figure it out. But the burning of the book thing, he actually had a few pages of a couple books just light on fire. And that was a very strange room. Would you go ahead?
Well, that's funny that it was a fire, because we had a recent case. One of the members of my team had that happen in his kitchen here some months back, and we've been racking our brains. Their baby nearly pulled a part of a shelf on top of the baby's head. The child grabbed a cord and was pulling on it, and he ran over, saw it happening, and ran over and jumped just in time to catch this from crushing his daughter. Turned around, and where he had been in the kitchen, he turned around to see, and there was nothing anywhere nearby that could have done this, but the paper towel rack that was kind of sitting upended on this one of those spools that just sit kind of on end on a counter was fully engulfed in flames. and he has an active haunt going on in the home, and we've been there many times and had many, many EVPs. There's a man that appears to Spence and his wife, and there's also just these strange manifestations that happen, cold spots, the whole works, but the fire thing, you don't hear about it too often, but it does happen, and it's just strange. Why would a ghost do that? Why would something like that happen? We're still trying to understand that.
Yeah, we can never figure it out. Like I said, I talked to you about it with my dad, just a few months ago, last time I saw him, and he said, I never figured out that house. I don't know what was there. I don't know why. It was very strange. He said, I never had things light on fire before. I was like, whoa, okay. But yeah, it is a very interesting phenomenon, and I've never seen anything like that before, so it's weird to me.
How did you get into doing this kind of work to begin, getting interested in ghost hunting and doing some of the things you've done in Arizona?
Well, I started doing tarot when I was about, ninth grade. That's when I started getting into witchcraft, too. I really liked it, and I had some friends that came that were, third-generation witches, and so it wasn't that big of a deal. Started doing that around that time, maybe reading people, just pretending to, just kind of getting into it. And then when I was about 19 or 20, I really started doing it more professionally and started reading people, just friends and stuff. And then I realized I could actually do it, and without the cards or with the cards, So from there, it just kind of, I started doing it more. But I didn't really, I used to do the paranormal stuff, the investigating stuff by myself a lot because I had prime places to do it, my house. So, I've been doing that part of it forever, but I really didn't get into the whole aspect of investigating with other people until about 12 years ago. I was 24, 25. I had just had my son, so must have been 24. And I was working a part-time job at this video store, and it was purportedly haunted. And so I used to live in Ventura County, where Richard Sennett lives. And so I got some tape recorders, the old analog ones, and this was in the 90s. So, my boyfriend at the time was a photographer, so he got some of the – I don't know what it is. It's the film that you can do in low light, and he set it up so that it would take pictures every half hour, and we left it overnight, and, we had a psychic go through and all the stuff, and then we asked Richard Sennett to come look at it and see if we had done it correctly and all this stuff, and he said, oh, yeah, you got something here. You're definitely very good at this, and I'm like, yeah, okay. And so from there, it just sort of, I'm like, all right, let's do this, because it was fun, and it was interesting, and I was good at it. And then from there, it just sort of, I got really into the whole dynamic of having a team and stuff. And then Taps was on TV, and I'm like, oh my God, that's me. And then got really more excited into it. And then I realized that the dynamic of a team is so hard to really keep together, and people don't do it for the reasons that I did it. And so it was really hard. And I tend to get a lot of press, and then people were getting mad because I got a lot of press, and then so I was like, okay, so it was kind of like I went through a few inceptions of teams, and then now I still have a team, but I have a very small team. I have like 5 people. I have like 3 people that are like always on it, and then I have like 2 or 3 people that I have on call. But I just don't do it as much anymore, just because I do it for different reasons, I guess. I do it more because I want to help people, and I used to do it because it was fun, and now I want to help people, and now I just feel like because I have worked on the medium stuff and I've worked on the psychic stuff and I can do psychometry, and which I want to talk about you more since you are a psychometrist, I do it for now for I feel sort of a spiritual responsibility to do it versus I used to just like it. I don't know. So, don't get me wrong, I still do it for fun. It's just I don't do it for fun as much.
It's funny. You talk about the team dynamic, and, you know, I've noticed that too. And, you know, I purposely kept GRI very small. And, you know, we've kept it into the 4 and 5 regulars. That's about what we do. And we try to keep it, you know, I recently did an investigation where we had 7 people, and that was the most I've ever had on an investigation. But, you know, it was such a large structure we did, you know, did this investigation. It just was, we needed the people. But usually we do 3 people, maybe 4 tops, you know, for the stuff we go out and do. And it, that's about what I feel comfortable handling. Sounds like we come from a lot of the same place. And it's funny, you know, you talk about the responsibility. And the thing we notice in our EVP work, because that's our specialty, is that we keep hearing these pleas for help, you know, and the EVPs for help. Crossover and things like that. So we've gotten more into crossover work, and I go out, you know, myself and you know, do work to help them. A lot of times I don't have anybody with me, and I just go out and I deal with it. And it's, I hear what you're saying. I really do. I mean, it's when you're a team lead and you're trying to, you know, pull it all together, and people are hard to pull together. It's very difficult. Sometimes it's a dream and everything is effortless, and other times it's just like herding cats, you know.
So. Oh yes, that's so funny that you call it that, because that's what we call us too. That used to be the thing. I'm like, okay, let's go herd some cats now, because that's exactly what it is. And there's so many. I guess what I've learned about the paranormal, and I'm a little jaded, but my optimism is coming back. But is that everybody does it just a little bit different, but nobody can see I'm not for paranormal unity at all, but I am for paranormal tolerance. Like, nobody tolerates each other. Like, if you do one thing different, they're like, oh, you do it different than I do, then I don't want to be your friend, or you do it wrong. And I'm like, whoa, dude, because, like, I have a really good friend. His name is Bill Murphy, and he does these documentaries, and one of the things he did, because he's from New Orleans and he lives in California now, but he actually traveled to different states and investigated with different teams to see how different people investigate per region. And he said that it's funny because everybody investigates different based on their culture, where they were born, and their personal experiences. And so, and there's nothing you can do to get around that. And he said that it's silly that everybody says that they're doing it the right way, because everybody does it different, and yet everybody gets the same results. So
I absolutely agree. I mean, it's, you know, I'm too busy trying to deal with, you know, my own cases and keep caught up with the evidence we've got, which we're always behind, you know.
Of course.
I've accepted the way it's going to be. But, it's funny. I've had friends come up to me and tell me other groups are, you know, not happy with what I'm doing. And it's like, well, okay, whatever. And you know, if I sat around and worried about it, it's interesting that you to hear somebody say that, and then you find out, yeah, there's some truth to it. But you look at it and you go, what difference does that make? I mean, if they're so worried about me instead of, you know, what they're doing with their own cases, there's plenty of ghosts to go around. Sorry. You know, I just think that, you know, the casework is interesting enough, and there's enough of it that everybody can have their own piece of whatever they want. And I hunt for places that are not the well-known stuff. You know, we go out and do a lot of field work and go to places where it's just not stuff that's not on the map. We develop our own databases and go out there and find these new spots. And it's just, it just seems to me it's a waste of time to be worried about what another group's doing, you know. I'd rather hunt with, other like-minded groups and, combine resources. And I've talked with my friends over in Southern California at Journey Paranormal. They're real open to that kind of thing. And we've made some great, alliances and things across boundaries. But, I hear where you're coming from. It's tough out there, you know. And I can understand the jaded part, but it sounds to me like you're getting back into the work, part of it, the stuff that really means something, and finding the joy there.
Yeah, that's part of it too. That's part of it too, is that suddenly your perception shifts and you go, okay, I'm doing this because of this now. And then it takes on this whole new meaning. And that's where I don't take as many cases now. I don't do as much now because I'm a little more choosy, but I mean, I think it's a good thing.
What sort of cases, speaking about your group, what sort of cases do you work now? And, what are memorable cases that come to mind with you that really have made an impact?
That's a good question. Lately, I haven't been doing any. Lately, I've been forwarding them on to other people. But I think, no, honestly, I get like about two or three. I get two or three referrals a day, like people asking me, and I'm like, wow, I can't keep up with that. So I do have a couple teams that I farm stuff out to because I'm like, I can't do it all. I'm sorry, but I'm on the radio a lot and stuff, so people like recognize my name and like, oh, let's ask her. But what I like to do cases that are where people generally need my help. Like they're afraid, they don't know what to do, they're really, really in the dark. And I did a few cases like that this over the summer and before my book came out, because that's taking a lot of time. But I was doing a lot more, like, there was a woman who had a 14-year-old son who it was a foster child, and his mother died in another country, and that's why he was here, is because she couldn't come here, and I don't know the whole story, but he ended up here, and she ended up there, and she was a refugee or something, and so she had to give him up here, and she died in this weird fire, speaking of fire again, And so as soon as she died, all of a sudden there was activity in the house, and the mother was really, really upset because she had other foster children, and she, her 14-year-old was grieving over his mother, who he still had contact with, and then the house was going crazy. And so that to me was a really, really sensitive case, but it was also very fulfilling because, we talked to them about just the grieving process and how he was 14 and how he could be creating his own stuff. And we did an investigation in the house, and we figured out that the house wasn't really haunted. It was actually him and his grieving process, and he was projecting that grieving out into the house, and he was making things move and stuff. So it was more PK than it was an actual haunting. And as soon as we started telling him this and talking to him about it and just sitting down with him for a couple hours before the investigation and then doing the investigation, he felt a lot better about it, and we found out that the activity actually stopped because he was able to control it more, and he was able to realize what was going on with his own emotions. And so
do you think she was there?
Yeah, I do think she was there too. I think she was visiting him and stuff too. And I gave him some hints on how to communicate, and stuff. And I said, don't treat her as dead. Just talk to her like she's a normal person. And, that pretty much did it. So I like doing cases like that where it's where those people just needed somebody to tell them what was going on. That's all they needed, and it was simple. And we did the investigation just to make them feel better, even though we kind of knew that it was going to be a PK case. But I don't know. I like to do stuff like that because it is fulfilling, and you feel like you're really, really helping somebody, and they're grateful for it. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm going to get back into it more. Like I said, as soon as things die down a little bit around here and I have less radio interviews to do and stuff, and the book is kind of taking off a little bit more, I'm going to start getting back into more cases. So I got to get back out there.
The book itself, Ghosts of Central Arizona, I've been to Sedona a couple of times and been near Jerome, and I'm intending to go out that way this year. And actually, a friend of mine, Karen from Phoenix, is on, and she's a member of our team. She's GRI Phoenix, so I'm going to be stopping in to see her. But I've never hunted that part of the state. Actually, never hunted anything in Arizona before. But what's it like there, and what are some of the things that are in the book that you cover?
Okay. If you've never been to Arizona to investigate, you need to. I don't know why. I used to live in California, you know, and I thought I saw my fair share of paranormal activity, but it's crazy out here. And just the level of activity is so different out here. I think it's just because it's a different environment. Part of it is that this part of the country was very much at war. There was, you know, settlers here and Indians here. And they fought all the time. I mean, there was so many barriers that were built and walls and stuff, and it was a constant thing. You were constantly living, waiting for the next attack. And then you had the Spanish coming in here, and then the white Americans, and you had the American Indians here all fighting for territory in this small area. And then you had the mining on top of that. So there was just, and lots of immigrants came in through there. So it was a very much survival of the fittest kind of place. And that energy is still here, and it's vibrant. And then you have the sun, and there's all this quartz here, and, you know, all of the natural, there's an underwater river that runs through here too. So, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of, what do you call them, ley lines and stuff like that here too. So there's just this concentrated energy here, and like especially in like Jerome or Sedona or the areas where there used to be mining, like Tucson, there was mining, and in Tombstone there was mining, just in all these other areas there was mining, and then there was the extremes of people working underground for hours at a time and then partying for days at a time. So you have like 10 days off, 20 days on or something. So you have these crazy schedules, and people just partied when they were off. So you have, this extreme concentration of energy. So Jerome is probably one of the most haunted places I've ever been. The whole city is haunted. You can't, it's 1 mile up in the air, literally. You go around this mountain, and it's at the top of the mountain. It's three big, it looks like I describe it in the book as like a chutes and ladders board, because that's how it is. You have like three intertwining cities, streets, and then it's like you have mountain on one side, and then you have a mile drop on the other, and then you have the mine still there. It's still, I mean, they just have it for maintenance, but it's still there. And Jerome was the city, because it was up on this hill and it was a mining town. They got away with all kinds of stuff that no other areas got away with. There was prostitution was rampant there. Drinking was awesome. People just partied it up. So, again, you had, like, these 3 weeks of work, 2 weeks off. So the 2 weeks off, it would just be drink and women. And they didn't have a very good fire station. They didn't have a fire station at first, and they had a crappy one after that. So the city burned down like 3 or 4 times. And so people were jumping out of windows and stuff. So you have that whole extreme going on there too. So if you can imagine that kind of environment in a very small area, It's just fit to be haunted.
I thought we had it. I thought we had it bad up here. I mean, I'm in near Placerville. We had all the crazies fighting over gold and stuff up here, but with all of the warring going on down there, that just adds a whole new level to this. And then the tragedies. I'm gonna have to check it out. I mean, when I was in Sedona, back in 2005, I was chase support for our motorcycle group for my company, and I was the blocker with my little 05 Mustang, and I'd cover for them. And actually, me being there made it easy for them to get around a lot faster. But when we stopped in Sedona, that was my second time there. I was there in 1993. I was in Phoenix for training, and I got a day off and drove up there to check it out. But in 05, I was there, and I felt I can't put my finger on it, but it felt like electricity in the air. And you would go certain places out by Bell Rock, I think is what it's called. And I had a couple of trails out there, and my God, it was just, it was like, your third eye is just buzzing, you felt like there was somebody looking at you from everywhere. I definitely want to go back there because it was just such an amazing feeling there, and you came away very energized. I think that's probably the best word for it.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you talk about it being looked at everywhere because, and I tell this story in the book. I'm going to tell you the very short version because I'm long-winded, but in the book it is. when I went through there the first time, especially in Bell Rock, I did have that feeling of being watched, and I looked up into the mountains, and I saw the vision because I'm clairvoyant. So I saw the vision of all of these Indians looking down at me, and I was like, this is creepy. And then I saw bloodshed, and I saw that there was a tribe that annihilated this other tribe. And I said, whoa, aren't I supposed to be getting a happy feeling when I go through here? And our guide said, some of the psychics actually do feel that. It's an interesting dichotomy of bloodshed and true spirituality. It's like a duality of it. And I was like, okay, and I was, like, really not happy the first time I went there because of that. And then, because I saw that so plainly, that energy, and then the second time I went, I was already aware of it, so I kind of tuned that out, and I just felt what you were feeling, the buzz and the energy, and I said, wow, no wonder people are so attracted to this place. It's like life and death, literally. It's like a strong balance of the two.
Yeah, it feels like a current going through there. And, I've heard some of the more new age philosophy types talking about how there is an actual like ley line and a whole giant portal that is operating there. And it's feeding all these paranormal activities, throughout the whole region. And I'm inclined to agree with it because it was I've just never experienced anything like it. And I've been around some awfully haunted places, but I was just getting into, this field in a more serious way about that time. And I remember my first night sleeping there when we slept in a hotel, I had the strangest dreams, and I was flying, and there was feelings of just, walking out in the desert. I remember a dream I had like on the second night. It just was, everything just seemed more real when you were, in that town and just the stuff that happened. It was just, I don't know. I really want to live there. I really fell in love with the area, and I got be visiting there more often than not here in the coming years, because of that. I think it's just awesome.
It is a special place. I can tell you that Bell Rock does have a electromagnetic field. We actually took some equipment up there. We took thermometers and we took EMF just to see, because one of the theories is that it actually has an electromagnetic field that fluctuates. And I was like, okay, let's see if this rock has it. You know what I mean? Like, all right, there's no electricity here. So, we left our cell phones in the car, and I turned mine off just to make sure we weren't getting any weird false positives. And I was actually laying on the rock near the bottom, and I was like, I don't know if I'm just a little hungover because my birthday was the day before, so I drink a little bit more than I usually do. And I was like, I don't know if I'm a little hungover or if something's going on, but every couple minutes I feel this spinning motion, and it's kind of unnerving. And the girl who was my tech at the time said, nope, you're not crazy, you're not hungover. Every time you get dizzy, it actually fluctuates on the EMF detector. And you can gauge it's about 2 or 3 minutes. You could actually see it go up, and then it goes right back down. And that's exactly when everybody starts to feel dizzy. So it does have a weird electromagnetic field there that we couldn't pinpoint where it was coming from or why. And it was only when you felt it that it actually spiked. So it makes me want to go back and just do more testing, bring other equipment and see. Like, I want to bring a natural EMF there.
Oh, man, I agree with you. I mean, it's funny. I've got the not the natural EMF meter, but the earlier model. It doesn't quite have all those same functions. But it's funny to go out in some places and watch that just without any paranormal anything present, you can actually see fluctuations in the Earth's magnetic field with those extremely sensitive. So, that's an ideal test is to, baseline it, go to another place, take some measurements, see what happens, and then go there. Now you're doing some really good science, I think that'd be really cool.
I was really, really surprised. And like I said, I want to go back, and we didn't have very much time because it was getting dark, or else we would have stayed longer. And we weren't expecting to get anything because, you read stuff online and people say stuff, you're like, yeah, whatever. So we weren't really prepared for it. But like I said, I'd love to go back and just like sit there all day. And like you said, go and take many readings and figure out where it's coming from and stuff. But, I mean, it is a very interesting place. It's a very beautiful place. It has an energy all its own. Cottonwood is lovely. It's such a small town, but it's lovely. We always stay in Cottonwood and then go up to Jerome and then go to Sedona. But, I just love the energy there.
Well, tell you what, let's take just a moment, and I'm going to do station identification, and then we'll come back and continue that. And so let me go ahead and run our little bumper over here once I get my control panel to show back up here.
Okay.
Don't you hate that on Blog Talk? Sometimes this thing just restarts on its own, and oh my goodness.
Yeah, okay, it happens to me too.
Oh, man. We're going to go ahead and take a break. Here we go. You are listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, coming to you from the Haunted Studios here in Shingle Springs, California, live on blogtalkradio.com. Author Heather Woodward, accidental medium, author, clairvoyant, and psychometrist, and much more. And it's a really good interview we've got going on here. If you get back in my chair here, ran off and got some extra water here all set up. So, and tell you what, we had a couple of questions I snagged from the chat room. And the first one was from Kathy. From Kathy's Distant Echoes, and she has a great program out here on Blog Talk, too. And I host with her also on Thursday nights, and she's just an amazing lady, if you ever get a chance to listen to her. She was asking what you think of reverse psychometry.
Yeah, I'm talking to her in the chat room right now about that, and I didn't know what it was, and I was looking online about it, and she says that you take an object and instill a thought into it for future psychometrists. And I thought that was ingenious.
Yeah, it came up on our show yesterday, and I'm the guy that found it. It kept getting brought up on all these different topics, on different shows, and it kept getting asked in my show. So I went and I found this little website, and it talked about it. It's like, oh yeah, you just plant a thought for somebody down the road, and then see if they catch it. And I thought, I've never thought of doing that. I've been reading objects my whole life, and I never thought about putting something into it. And it's just, yeah, you're right. It's ingenious. It's almost too obvious, you know.
I know. That's what I thought. I was like, okay, why didn't I figure that out?
You know, sometimes.
But I wanted to ask you about how you do it, because I do it a certain way, and I've been doing it forever and not realizing I was doing it. How do you do it?
You know, I found it quite by accident, and it turned out it was just something that I'd been doing my whole life and didn't really realize. And I would see pictures in my head, or I would just blurt out something after touching an object, and it would just it'd be embarrassingly correct. And it when I became aware of it, it sort of disappeared on me. And what I had to do was and learn to do was just not edit what was coming in. And mm-hmm. when I got out of my own way and I let that other part of my brain do its thing, which it was doing all along just fine before I became aware, then my accuracy went right back up. And so I would pick up, I'll pick up an object, you know, in a store or something like that. I'll go into antique stores, things like that. And or books, you know, and you'll suddenly feel something and you can get an impression and a fleeting picture comes through. The other thing that happens for me is if I touch people, I find that I can do some basic medical diagnosis on them. I can actually kind of sense what's happened to them or what's wrong with them. That was a very disturbing thing at first. I mean, you'd find these, you know, people who had had just amazingly, you know, horrible things that happened to them, and you didn't see that on the outside, and then you find out, you know, they'd had cancer or they'd had these different things. So it just seems to be, I think the biggest thing is just get out of your own way and don't edit what's coming through. Just let it come through. And the first thing you think is the first thing you throw out your mouth. And you may get it wrong in the way it comes out of your mouth, but generally, it leads into the right thing. I don't know if you catch what I mean. It's you may be shown it one way, and you'll slightly misinterpret what the picture was, and then later on, it mm-hmm. comes to pass. You were more right that you were almost right. You were just saying it differently. That's just
yeah.
how I do it.
It's interpretation. Yeah, where you're like you say it to them in a way they don't understand it. You go, well, I meant it kind of like this. I go, oh, that makes sense to me. And then you're like, oh, okay, the way that I would say it and the way that you would say it would be totally different. So you just have to find their language almost, I guess.
Yeah, it's a very personal thing. I mean, John Edward, I think, says it best on his show where he talks about his communications with the other side. And, excuse me, he is basically has his own symbols that he uses, and it's an agreement, like almost an agreed on language between him and the spiritual community that he's working with on the other side, and they know him real well, so it can only work for him his way, you know. And I think that's true with psychometry. I think it's you know, we each develop our own kind of special way of dealing with it, and I don't think it's the same for any two people, you know, who do this. It just seems to be something you do. You know,
I think that's true, and that's one of the things like that I teach in my psychic development class, and it's a very good point that you just made, because the one thing that we've been doing, we did the theoretical, now we're doing the practical, where I'm actually making them do readings on each other. And I said, look, I'm not doing this to force you into something. What I'm doing is I want to show you that each and everybody reads differently. And we actually brought in objects and did psychometry, and then we read a person. And it was so interesting because they were all correct, but they all picked up on a different aspect. And
yeah.
The other thing I teach is called a symbol dictionary, which is I say, learn how you associate things, learn your correlations, set up words that mean certain things to you. So that way, if you use spirit guides or you're just looking for universal validation, you can use your own symbols to mean stuff. And so that way, first, it teaches objectivity, but also it helps you understand what you're seeing and filtering, you know? And I mean, that's why I use Tarot so much, is because it's I don't actually read the card. I mean, I know the cards very well. I teach it, but I don't actually read the cards. It just helps me springboard my clairvoyance. It gets me pictures. So and I use them as symbols for other things. So I ask my spirit guides, or if I'm using universal consciousness, please project what you want me to see in these cards. And that's the way I do it. So.
Yeah, it's funny. A good friend of mine down in Folsom area is just a wonderful tarot reader, and she says exactly the same thing you do. She doesn't so much, you know, she's technically she knows the, you know, all the aspects of the, you know, the cards, what they all mean, knows the, you know, detailed history of where it all came from, all that. But most of the time, she's just using those as props, and she's going with this whole other level that she works at. And sure, she uses, you know, the technical knowledge, you know, that's the foundation, but it really comes out of this whole other place, and you're it really is all in the mind. I think, you know, it's just these physical things we use to cue off of, they're just there for, you know, convenience more than anything else, you know. And she keeps talking about one day she just isn't going to use cards, and I look at her and go, I don't know if it'd be the same. I kind of like them. They're pretty, and, you know, there's all these neat symbols, and, yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah, I mean, I think of them, I call it my little crutch, because I can do without them. I just don't like to. I like, and also the other thing, too, is you're reading a person, it gives them something to focus on, and so then you can pull more information from them because they're distracted. Because they're wondering what you're seeing in it. And so that, you know, and then you get that level of, they're not as guarded, you know, and all you have to do is say one thing right, and then they're like, oh, okay, they're reading the cards, they're not reading me. And so I like that aspect of it too.
Whoa, I never thought of it. Okay, so it's actually a device to distract the person being read rather than, that actually would make sense. That actually would.
Yeah, because they're going, what is she seeing that I'm not seeing, you know, and they're trying to figure it out, and then they're leaving themselves open to interpretation.
Yeah. I notice that when I'm touching somebody, and actually reading them, sometimes they get all closed down, and it's like, oh God, you know, you gotta try to work through it, and it just doesn't work out that well. I think that's a great idea. I mean, I never thought of it that way. You know, and I've been around this stuff my whole life. Something new every day. Doesn't matter how much I try.
It's true. Another technique that I use to trick people, I know it sounds horrible, like I'm tricking people, but some people just close down. They want you to read them so badly, and they close down, and you're like, okay, I'm not getting anything off of you. What I do is, instead of trying to read them, like their energy, I'll try to pick up something telepathically, like a thought that's going through their mind, or try to figure out what they had for lunch or something retarded like that. Something that's minuscule, but it validates you as a reader to them. And then all of a sudden they'll open up because they're like, how did she figure that out? Like, how did she know what I had for lunch? Or what did she know what I'm thinking? And it's just, I call it going around the back. It's like you pick up on the superfluous thoughts that they're thinking. And then when they're trying to figure out how you did that, then it's when you pull. So,
I think, you know, instinctively, I remember having the ability to just kind of engage them in small talk when it does get hard, and you just kind of say, you know, I'm not catching so much, and then you get going, and all of a sudden it once their mind's off of that and they're on the other subject, I have been doing that, come to think of it, but I just never realized I was doing it that way. It's not a purposeful thing.
Right. Huh. It's just you're distracting. It's distracted. I know it's horrible to say it that way, but it really is. I mean, if you really want to give somebody a really good reading, that's what you do. I do psychometry a lot like you do, actually. So, I don't really touch people, though. I touch more objects. I have a thing with personal contact, and it's just my own thing. I like to use like rings or jewelry that they've been holding on to or stuff like that. And I'll never forget the first time I ever did it in public. I didn't realize I was doing it, and my sister, I have two sisters, but the other sister said, "Hey, do you realize every time you pick up something, you're reading it?" And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "Yeah, you should try it." And so I remember I was on a radio show, and I was on a live radio show with, like, it was a really big show. And it was, like, this lady who I never met, that one of the hosts, she said, "So what else can you do?" I said, "Well, yeah, I can touch objects and stuff, and I can read them." And I hadn't really figured out how to do it yet. And this was, like, 5 or 6 years ago. And, like, I wasn't as good as I am now. And she said, "Oh, yeah?" She just handed me a bracelet. I'm like, "Oh, crap, now I got to do it." And so I picked up all this information on her mother, and I said, "Why is your mother coming in so much? There's this bright light around her. You know, you really need to, like, let go of this whole mother thing you have, because she didn't mean to do what she did," and blah, blah, blah. And I kept going, "Why do I see this bright light around her? It feels like there's this bright light, like she's burning up." And the lady almost started to cry, and I gave it back, and I said, "Okay, I'm done now." I'm like, I mean, we talked about something else, but afterwards she told me that it was her mother's bracelet, and her mother had died in a fire, and she was there, and she actually got saved, and the mother didn't, and so she always felt guilty about that. And she says, "You know, I'm glad you said that to me, but it wasn't very nice to say that to me on the air." And I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't know." I was pulling really hard, and that's what I got, because, you know, I wasn't finessed like I am now. So, yeah, that wasn't a very good initiation into it.
It's funny. I'd been doing it for some time, and when I first learned that there was a name for this, I had joined a local. There used to be a little shop that would call out to me. I would drive by it, and I always knew I had to go into this place. And it's long since closed down and gone into being something else. But it used to be called Ronnie's Holistic Health, and it had this this woman named Panda. She was just this amazing, amazing woman, and she was a witch, and she was this bubble-headed California blonde who went around spouting all this crazy stuff, and she was pointing her in a crutch. And she had these classes she would have every week at her house. And, you know, I tagged along and got to meet some amazing people. But we did psychometry hour every week. And it was just, I did it for years over there with that whole crowd. And it was just so neat, because what we would do is we'd throw it. That's how I started really doing it, was rings, necklaces, crystals. Anything that anybody had on them, keys, we would do sets of keys. Everybody would throw all their stuff in a big basket, and then everybody would reach in, and invariably people would pick their own stuff and throw it back in. They just,
oh my gosh!
Oh yeah, but it was a great thing, because you never knew who you were going to get, and no one. You know, the rule was no one said, "Oh, that's mine." You had to read it cold, and you know, we got really good at it. And this is something I'm doing on the show right now, and I'm trying to find the right format for this, because it's so difficult, because I don't have people's objects with me. I'm trying to kind of put a virtual connection in place, on the show doing psychometry, which has been a really evolutionary process, but we're getting there. And I'm trying to get people to play with this on their own, because they can learn to do it for themselves and just, you know, and once they do it, I think they're going to be hooked, kind of like I am. It's just such a wonderful thing. But once I keyed into that, this was really, something you could develop more. I really went with it, but I discovered the medical thing quite by accident. It was just a happenstance thing. I happened to touch somebody, and I got an immediate vision. It was just an accidental contact, and I said, "Pardon me, dude, are you ill?" "Well, yes." And it turned out to be, I won't go into what it was, but it was an issue. And it happened a second time by accident. It was somebody who had actually a cancer taken out of their wrist. And I said, "I've seen this notch in your wrist." And she looked at me like I was from the moon, and she finally got a little tear in her eye, and she says that's because they took cancer. I had a bone cancer on the wrist, and they actually cut this piece out to save me. And
She
says, how did you know? And I said, I just saw this like V in your wrist, and I thought, and I kept hearing the word bone, and so you know there you go. But I think in your case, I'll bet you if you touched people, you would have the same thing. And I know what you said earlier, but I just got this feeling with you on that. I think you'd be good at it.
The I am amazed that you can do the body stuff. I think that's so awesome. I am terrible at reading people's bodies, and then I never touch them. And I think the touching thing, I am so good at pulling energy that I'm afraid if I touch them, I'm going to get too much and get overwhelmed. You know what I mean? Because I read people by accident a lot of times. Like, my sister has a new girlfriend, boyfriend. My sister has a new boyfriend, and we went out to dinner, and I started telling this story about somebody who I'd read. I don't name names or anything. I give them a very general thing. But she said later on that he kicked her under the table because he thought that they were talking about them, because I guess the story is something that actually happened to them like a couple hours before. And so stuff like that happens to me all the time. And she's all, it wasn't us, right? I said, no, it was somebody I read. I really meant that. I wasn't lying. And she goes, okay, because it was uncanny. And I said, okay, yeah, that happens to me all the time. I get myself in trouble, but I wouldn't even know what I would do if I actually started touching people, because I'd be like, oh, like intravenous, you know? But I think that's amazing. I think there is such a, for you especially, there is such a market out there for people that need holistic healing or holistic intuitive body readings, you know?
Yeah,
not a lot of people do it anymore.
Yeah, Barbara Brennan does that kind of work, and she actually has a college back east that she develops these people that do this. And and it's funny because one of the other things I occasionally see, and I've been actually working on this in the last 6 months, is working with auras. And right now occasionally you'll see colors, but most of the time I just see a white outline, and I can see it extend out maybe about a foot past some people, and others are very tight. You know, you can only see, you know, out about an inch. It just seems to be something that, you know, I've got some of these different areas that I just seem to do well with. And, but, you know, I really think that everybody has these abilities. I think they can be developed. It's just, you know, giving yourself permission to do that. And and when you are willing to make mistakes, I'm a big believer in, you know, making lots of mistakes. It's just something that if the only way you're going to learn, even with these gifts that we have, is by going out there and flubbing it. You know, because you have to develop, you have to develop that whole notion of you know, giving yourself permission to laugh at yourself when you do flub it. And even the pros do that. I mean, you know, if everybody hit home runs all the time, would they, you know, what kind of world would it be? I mean, it's, I just think that it keeps it real, and not only that, it'll keep you laughing at yourself and not taking it so seriously.
Yeah, it's okay to be wrong, and that's the one thing that I know when, I mean, I agree with you. I think everybody's psychic. It's just a matter of opening yourself up to that and having an awareness of it and being confident in it. And people always tell me, well, I'm afraid to be wrong. I said, well, you know, the best psychics are only 70%. Did you know that? And they're like, no. I said, yeah, if you're over 50%, you're doing good. So, you know, you're not going to get everything correctly. You have your own experiences. You can misinterpret. The person may be lying to you. That's the other aspect of it. They may be lying to themselves. So you're only going to get a certain amount of energy, information, and it's okay if you misinterpret. It's okay if you're wrong. You just say, hey, I'm wrong, and leave it at that, and they go on to the next thing. People forgive you for that as long as you get most of it right. You know? So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just agreeing with you. I mean, absolutely right. It's just, there is a forgiveness factor with people being read, and I really think that if you just are up front and explain that right up at the very front of readings, you know, with folks, and I've done readings way back when, you know, I haven't done so much. I'm just now getting kind of my foot, you know, dipped back into all this. But if people do want to be read, they have a tolerance, you know, and some of them, you know, sure, you're going to run into your occasional screwball that's going to be, you know, not understand what's really going on with it. But most people have had experience with it, and that's why they go to readers, and they know the drill. So, you know, it's just that new readers that I've seen, you know, if they haven't been schooled by somebody like what you're doing, which is a real service, you know, going out there and teaching this stuff, you know, they are afraid of failure, and so they'll tighten up on their reading, and it's just interrupting the whole flow, you know. And you're right, you know, I feel good at 50-70%, and you know, it's sometimes it's better. You know, the days, you know, you had a rough day and you're not reading so good, and sometimes you just have to say, you know, I'm not on my game today. We'll have to reschedule. You know? So.
Yeah, that's the other thing. People think you're psychic all the time, and that's simply not true. I mean, we have bi-rhythms, and there's some days I couldn't get myself out of paper bag if I wanted to. I mean, I just can't do it. And those days I say, okay, I'm going to do something else today. I'm not going to do readings today. And then there's days that I am so psychic that it's ridiculous, like don't sleep because of it, you know, and a lot of it depends on what I'm doing and my mood and all other things. So, I mean, that's part of it too, is if you can find your natural biorhythms and you kind of can know when you're better and when you're worse, then you can kind of live around that. And,
yeah,
you know, and that's
funny,
when, that's when like tarot or other divination helps, because if you know you're not going to be that psychic that day, then you can really read the cards that day. You know what I mean? You can kind of fake it a little bit more. So, I don't know.
Sometimes you need the crutch to be able to get back on the bike, and then it'll get the groove going. You know, it just depends. But, you know, it's funny. I'm reminded of an old story of Sammy Davis Jr. Was, you know, I mean, everybody remembers Sammy, an incredible singer, just all around nice guy. And my mother actually met Sammy, and he was just a perfect gentleman to her, and was, you know, actually invited her and some other guests up in Vegas, up to where he was staying, and entertained them. And they were just on the floor, happened to be talking. He walks up and introduces himself, and the next thing you know, they're having cocktails with Sammy Davis Jr. But that's the kind of guy he was. And what was amazing, though, is one night he came out to do a show, and he was just singing, and nobody detected that he was really having a bad night, and finally he just stopped. And he looked at everybody and says, you know, folks, some nights I've got it, and some nights I don't. Tonight I don't have it. And he goes, I just don't feel like I'm giving you a good show. He says, but what I want to do is I want to go ahead and, you know, let this rest of the show, the backup performers come on, and I will pay for everyone's dinner. Now, you have to realize the size of the establishment this guy was in. It cost him like $300,000 to pay for the dinner.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, but this guy, you know, that's the kind of, you know, that was, I think, an important lesson to people to, you know, he was a teacher in a lot of ways. And so what he was teaching was to be honest, to be real, and be relevant about where
yeah.
you're at. And so if you are, you know, if you're not having a good day with it, walk off, you know, that's it. I have a thing of, if I'm sick, I don't read, I don't investigate, I don't do anything. I'm just not going to do that. No, I'm not on my game. Forget it. You know, I don't care that we had plans. We're going to have to work it around, you know. It's just, you're not well, you're not well, and you're not going to be doing anybody any good walking around sick and infecting everybody else. So it's just that, but I love that story about Sammy Davis. I've got a couple of questions in the chat room. You know, just are you up for, you know, I extended the show just a bit. Are you up for staying on just a little longer?
Yeah, it's totally fine.
Okay. Thank you, by the way. And everybody in the chat room loves you for this, so. There was one question that was asked, and I think it was Dominica Marte asked, John, can you ask her if she knows about Whiskey Row or the Vendome Hotel in Prescott, Arizona? So I'm just going to switch and talk.
The Vendome Hotel is very haunted. I don't know the stories, though, offhand. There's actually a really good book called Sleeping with Ghosts that has some great stories about the Vendome Hotel. I didn't get to go there. What was the other one?
Whiskey Row.
I never even heard of it. I've never even heard of it. Yeah. Now I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah,
but the Venom, I know, is popular around here.
Yeah, maybe Dominica can share what that's about in the chat room. She's got that. Okay, so at least we have a title of a book for the first one. And what was that title again? I'm going to check that myself.
It's Sleeping with Ghosts by Deborah Branning. She's another writer. She lives actually in Bisbee. And she's written a couple of ghost books about especially the Prescott area and the Flagstaff and around there. She knows all about that area.
Yeah.
I didn't do the Venom because it's been written about a lot. And it's very popular. So, and she, like I said, she already wrote something about it. So I only went to places that I thought, I mean, a lot of places have been written about, but I went to places that I really, really wanted to go to and that I could get really good stories from. So I was kind of choosy because there's so many places out here. My goodness.
Yeah, I know the feeling. It's here. It's just, I live on a haunted ranch here myself, and we've got all the, I'm in the middle of such a spooksville. I mean, it's so easy to find spots. It's like, where do you go? You just pick a direction that day and see what you come up with. And,
totally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes I'll just walk into old places and I'll walk up to somebody and say, hey, I'm a ghost hunter. Throw out my card and say, do you know anything about any haunts here? And all of a sudden, three quarters of the time, you're going to get a story about some ghost that's on the property and an invitation to hunt there, So, that's a neat trick to remember when you do this stuff is just go out there and start asking questions. The worst you can do is
yeah.
Look cool. And a lot of people are like, this place is really haunted. Glad you came in. Do you got a car? Okay, yeah, thanks. Okay.
It totally happens. You'd be amazed. I'm writing my second book right now, and I actually went to a bunch of places. And just ask questions. And if you just go up to the desk and start talking to them, there was a lot of places I was there for like over an hour because they're like, oh, let me tell you all the stories. Look at our guest book. And I'm like, wow, you guys have a guest book with ghost stories in it? Like, yeah, we try to document everything that happens here. I was like, awesome. This is easy. Woo! just talk to people. It's the easiest way to get stuff out of like ghost stories, especially.
Yeah, I've got a case that we're looking at right now in downtown Placerville. It's the oldest hardware store west of the Mississippi, and the ghosts in there are very particular about how the hardware store goods are arranged, and they will change things if they don't like what the store personnel have done. And so they also have a habit of if it's a pretty young lady that's new there working, the big going joke is if they go in and if they're wearing sneakers or any shoes that have, that can be tied, they will untie the women's shoes. It seems to be, this ghost has got a sick sense of humor. I don't understand. But anyway, I'm trying to get it set up so we can actually get in there. And every place, it's like this whole area. That's the way it is. So I'm sure you've got like crazy stories like that you've run into.
Yes, I have plenty. I have tons. I've had everything from things being thrown at me to being pushed over to anything in between. I've had my fair share of fun experiences and scary ones too. I don't like when things get thrown at me. That's what I don't like. There's a place out here in Tombstone where we went back three times and we got stuff thrown at us three times in a row. This was over like 3 month period, and we went with different people, different times of the day and night, and we still got stuff thrown at us. And I was like, okay, this is just ridiculous. So I don't know why that. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, when you got rocks being tilted at you, they're like, oh, we recognize you, Chuck. I'm like, oh, my God. And I was like, you guys, if you don't want rocks so that you don't stand around me, because that's where they end up. So I haven't been back after that.
Was it the same spot you were getting thrown at?
No, It was different areas. It's this cabin out in the middle of the woods, and not in the woods, but in the desert, and there's shrubbery everywhere. And I'm like, well, maybe it's maybe there's animals or something. Let's go to a different time when we can actually see stuff. And it just kept happening. And the last time we went to it was they actually, whatever was there, threw it so hard that it nearly missed my face. And I was like, okay, I'm done now. That's it. I don't want to get hit in the face. The first time it hit me in the shoe, and that was okay. I don't really care about that. You know, it was just a toss to the shoe. But
yeah.
Near my face is just a little bit where you can see the whiz go by. You're like, okay, I'm done. You know, so. And we never could figure out what it was. That there was no animals around, no people, nothing.
Really?
We looked around in the bushes just to make sure. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird place, though. So.
The only time I ever had anything thrown at me was right after my uncle Brian had passed away in December of 2008. And 2 weeks after he passed, we were having a discussion in our house about kind of the way he treated his son. And I had some disagreements about it, and I kind of voiced that. And when I said that, my mother and I were looking at each other, and her ashtray lifted right off, right in front of us, levitated in the air, and came down and slammed right into my foot, hit the big toe, and it actually hurt. And my mother looked at me, and my father, who was just getting over a major seizure he'd had, was sitting there, and she looked at me and shook her head real quick, and I'm looking at this thing that's just happening, going, what the hell just happened? I mean, this is own house. And it just was amazing, you know. From a paranormal technical, you know, perspective, I mean, wow, what a phenomenon to have happen. But the other thing was, geez, I really pissed my uncle off when I said that, you know. And later on, he had to atone for some of his behaviors, because he did have some issues that he had to deal with. And he actually was coming in their dreams afterwards. I think it kind of made him look at himself, and he felt so bad about it that, I actually counseled my cousin, who was, you know, the son, and my mother was helping a bunch with it too, because he was coming in and apologizing for all the things that had happened. And I think he's moved on to the other side now, but he stayed around a long time. And, but I was always looking on my shoulder. I wanted to make sure if I said anything, I wasn't going to get slammed with an ashtray or upside the chops, you know. That just ain't right.
Oh my gosh, that's an amazing story. I've never had an ashtray thrown at me. I've had a flashlight, but not an ashtray.
Yeah, what got me was it was thrown with real force, you know, and I have never seen anything like that. Now, I've had pictures moved on me. I've had objects picked up and moved when we haven't seen them, you know, come back and they're moved, and they'll, you know, it was in a controlled, locked off location, stuff like that, but to actually watch it levitate. That's a new one, you know. It kind of messed my whole day up. You know this stuff happens, but when it happens to you, my goodness, that's just right out of left field. So I don't know.
I think the funny part about that is you think that you're ready for it because you've been in all these situations. And like with me, we were doing a circle because we were actually in a sanitarium, and there was some really nasty things there. And so
yeah.
We were doing a circle just for protection and stuff, and we knew there was something negative in the room. And I was like, okay, you guys, I'll just be the anchor, and I'll make sure that psychically the doors are closed. And you guys keep doing what you're doing, because I was the only one that could see the entity. I think it was just a bad person, but and they were just trying to keep the thing going. And of course, I see near the door of this room that we were in, this flashlight comes. I see it get picked up in the air, and it threw in, like, it went past my ankle, and it actually flipped 180 degrees. So it was one way, flew in the air, turned, and landed perfectly right next to me. And I literally jumped and screamed. Like, I went, oh! And there was, like, just to hold down, don't freak out. You know, that's just, we're trying to get the entity out of here, and and is trying to break your concentration. I said, well, good job, it just did. But so but they're like, no, you have to just get back into it. And I'm like, okay, so I just refocused and did it. But I had never had anything thrown at me or seen anything actually move like that before, and it scared the crap out of me, let me just tell you.
Have you ever had a case of being pushed, or have you had any touching? I'm sure you know, because we've had plenty of that.
The pushing I don't like. The touching I don't mind so much. The pushing, there was a house actually down the street from where I live in Tucson, on A Mountain, which is really famous, and there was a lot of stuff that happened there. And this person that my sister knew had bought a house. He said, it's really haunted. He actually got me out of bed. I can't believe this. They're at my house. My sister got me out of bed and said, he's got this house. He's only going to be here for a couple of days because he's going to Las Vegas. Do you mind doing a psychic profiling of his house? I'm like, it's midnight. I'm sleeping. She's like, please. I'm like, okay. So I went to the house, and they said, well, there's this man that keeps showing up on the balcony. We called the police because people keep seeing him. And the police come, and then there's nobody here. And I say, okay, I'll figure out what it is. So I was walking around the house, and I picked up on all the hot spots, and I told him what it was pretty much, and told him who I thought it was. And so we go into the balcony, or that's where the ghost keeps being seen, this man. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to go on the balcony. I'm going to try to talk to him or try to figure it out. And he's like, I wouldn't do that. People who go on the balcony don't really like it, and sometimes people get pushed. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm like, I'm pretty good at this. It's okay. So I take one step, and I'm in like Crocs, which are like so easy to walk in. And I'm in my pajamas still, like sweats and a T-shirt. And I walk, take one step, and I get knocked over, fall on top of my sister. And the owner of the house just stands and stares at us. And my sister's like, you just got pushed, didn't you? I said, yeah, that sucked. But then I still went on the balcony, and I still talked to this guy and figured it out. But it was just, I was kind of pissed off, actually.
Wow.
Like, I was like, why'd you do that? That's not very nice. Like, and my sister's like kind of laughing at them. She says, I'm laying on top of her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What was your reaction? I mean,
I was just mad. I was like, I'm going on the balcony now, bastard, because you're talking to me now. I was like, maybe you shouldn't do that. Then he might push you over. I'm like, I'm still talking to him. If this dude is that annoying, we're going to have a talk. You know what I mean? Because if he's doing that to me, imagine what he's doing to the people in the house. I mean, so I went up there, and it was very uncomfortable for 5 minutes. But the thing was, though, is I knew I had to go in there because I needed to see what he was seeing. I needed to know what the view was on the balcony so I could understand his thought process. And once I did that, I got clearly who he was and why he was overlooking the balcony and what he was thinking. And once I did that, it was so easy to figure out what was going on in the house. But I think he knew that, though. I think there was this, because he was a landowner kind of person, and he thought he knew everything. And I just remember the one thing that was really, really clear was he had these big boots on. But,
Man, I'll tell you what, it's funny because I've had a number of run-ins with ghosts who are kind of have attitudes, to put it mildly. And we have a place called Pioneer Cemetery where I mm-hmm. went, and I like hunting cemeteries for EVPs because we get them there, even though some famous people say you don't get them. Well, I've got tons, okay? So I went out there, and I was working in this, just doing some check readings and enjoying the day. Come back, and I've got this EVP from this one guy who told me to get a life. And I got kind of ticked off.
Oh, my gosh.
So I went back, and I did another session there, and I had some friends with me, and I told this guy, I says, I've got your message about getting a life, and let me give you the message back. Get a death. And the laughing that came back was great. I mean, nobody'd ever heard that, get a death. And he came back, and now he's like one of the most talkative ones. When I show up, this guy's always on, and he remembers me telling him to get a death. It's just like, I don't know. It's just
that's incredibly cool.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of ticked me off, and I don't think he expected me to come back, you know, and say, yeah, I heard you, and by the way. And it's funny, I've noticed that we get relationships with different spirits to different places we regularly go to, and it just seems like they even call you by name, and I'm sure you've had that stuff happen.
Oh, yeah, I've gotten the name thing. That really kind of creeps me out. I've gotten some EVT, like we were on Wolf Manor. We went there once on the Wolf Manor show or whatever it's called. Got invited to go there last January, and we went, and some people from my team, and I've never been there before, and I'm always really skeptical of places that are really haunted because I usually find they're not. But that place is really haunted, like creepy, crazy haunted. And before we were on the show, we got to actually do a tour of the place because I wanted to do some psychic profiling and practice. He said, sure, do whatever you want. That's fine with us. We like to see what psychics come up with here. So, when we were doing that before we were on the show, we were doing some EVP work to see if we get some EVPs. And I'm at the top of the stairs, one set of the stairs. And I go, you know, I feel like this guy is laughing at me right now. And I'm like, wow, I'm being laughed at. And my tech, the next day, she calls me and she says, you're never going to guess what happened. I said, what? She says, remember when you were talking about that ghost laughing at you? She says, I have an EVP of a guy right before you say it laughing. And I'm like, no way. Are you serious? And she's like, yeah. And so she cut me the clip. And it's so uncanny. You hear this mechanical laugh. And then you hear me go, I think somebody's laughing at me. And I just, things like that always just kind of, it's just such validation for me because, you know, nobody else can hear that laugh and you can hear it so clearly in your head. And it's, the interaction I think is great.
It's funny, I hunted the same place in December of 2008. I was at Wolf Manor. And I hunted with a bunch of folks from TAPS, and it was just amazing. And I've commented on it before. It was such. I've never come out of a haunted location feeling quite so beat up spiritually. I mean, it was just
me too. There. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was just. I felt like it took me 3 days to get where I felt like I could. I was back to my old self because it just took that much out of you, and the EVPs we got in there. I got one in Mary's room.
Uh-huh.
That was this voice that comes on and goes, "You are hate out." and we got screaming. I mean, I've got some amazing EVPs out of there, but it was just, oh my God, what a yucky, horrible energy. I mean, it just, when I opened up a little bit, I keyed into a woman in the kitchen. I keyed into a woman mm-hmm. named Elizabeth who was basically made pregnant there and then killed to hide the truth. And it was just awful. I mean, I had to close back up. I mean, the minute I got that, it was like it just came pouring in. And between that and then the just the crazy activity going on, I don't know. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. That place has just got a power all its own. Probably
it is one of the weirdest places. Yeah. What you were going to say.
Yeah. I mean, what other things happened to you in there?
I actually had the weirdest experience in that place. And like I said, I felt beat up afterwards. I was like, wow, I am so tired. Because, you know, there is so much weirdness in that place. The one thing that happened to me that hardly ever happens to me, I was walking up those damn stairs up until the third floor, you know, when you go up into there, and I actually almost passed out on the stairs because the guy that was laughing at me, I think his name was Henry or something like that. That's what the name I got, but he was laughing at me, and before that, he actually tried to kind of rip me out of my body because he wanted to get in and say, hey, I have some messages for you kind of thing. And I literally felt it, and I went, like that, and I had to sit down because I knew I was going to pass out, and I'd be like, no, You are not going in there. You are not going to do it. I refuse. And it took me a second. And then I got to the top of the stairs finally. And that's who was laughing at me. He was just laughing because he thought it was funny because I was going to pass out. And he thought it was funny that he almost got in without me even knowing. And like, this guy is awful, and he's killed some people here. And they're like, yeah, we know there was a massacre here, blah, blah. I'm like, well, you know, I don't know why the murdering Henry wants to be my friend. But and he kept trying to tug me, and he kept saying, come, I want to show you what I did. I want to show you what I did. And I'm like, I'm usually okay with psychic profiling because I do it well, and I'm usually okay with seeing the gruesome stuff. It's fine because I disattach from it. I'm not empathic, so it doesn't bother me. But I was not going with this crazy ghost. I was not doing it. I just was like, I do not want to know what you did. I don't want to know. And to hell with you for trying to, first, invade my body, and second, trying to show me what you did. You know, I'm not giving into this. And they're like, oh, yeah, there was a massacre. This one patient, he was crazy. Actually, he stabbed a bunch of people. I was like, oh, that's nice. That's special.
You know,
and I was like, oh, great. So that happened to me, and that was a little bit traumatic. And after that, I sort of closed myself down a little bit because, and like I said, that no other place that happened to me was I did a tour at the Queen Mary because I was being, they were testing me for a show, blah, blah. Long story short, I got thrown into down in, down below where the two, I forget where it was. It was where they kept all of the refugees during this World War II. And I didn't know this history of the boat. And I was like, wow, this part of the boat feels like a cemetery. And the lady goes, why do you say that? I said, I don't know. It's the same feeling it was cemetery. I feel like there's all these people talking to me. And so we were going to go down into the cargo hold. And I'm a little bit claustrophobic, and I was okay. It was like 2:30 in the morning. But I just kept getting all this chattering in my head. And I was like, there are so many people trying to talk to me right now. I cannot concentrate. And she's like, and nobody would tell me what was going on. And I actually had to sit down in the cargo hold. And I said, I am just going to throw up and pass out now because this sucks. And she's like, okay, well, let's take you back up. You're obviously really sensitive. I said, yeah, I just, and she says, well, you know, sorry we didn't tell you, but like they used to take the bodies and they put them in beside these airtight bulks. And as people died, they would just throw them in there. And she says, I understand why you would get the impression of it being a cemetery. And I said, well, yeah, it's kind of not nice to tell a psychic who does psychic profiling to go into a place where hundreds of people died. And maybe you should have warned me a little bit because when you have hundreds of people trying to talk to you at once, it's a little bit unnerving, especially when my guard was down because I didn't know what had happened. And the other thing too was, as I told the lady, I said, I felt like there was 100 people on top of me and 100 people below me, and there's a bunch of people that drowned too. And she's like, yeah, you're right. She's like, you got it from both ends because the cargo hold, the missile went through and people died in there too. I said, nice. Okay. So,
you know, Queen Mary, I actually went to the same exact spot you went. I went down in the cargo hold in March of last year and took the tour. It was they had a Friday night or a Saturday night tour, and I took it and went down, and, you know, it was in the where they kept the German prisoners, and you had to climb down that ladder. And it was, you know.
That's where I freaked out.
Yeah, I got down there, and I was picking up stuff right and left, and I stood off to the left. And you know how it kind of curves off to the left when you first get down the ladder. There's another like extended area out, and you're in this horrible dank dark place. And we were sitting there. All of a sudden, I started seeing my breath, and we had people who had digital temperature devices were sitting there, saying we're getting a steady drop in temperature, and in 10 minutes the temperature dropped 8 degrees. Now,
if
you stop that, it's a huge energy transfer going on. So, you know, we were all seeing our breaths and commenting on it, and I was getting German EVPs.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And you could not help but feel like there were people down there looking at you. And it was just a very confined feeling. I didn't pick up the things you picked up with the cemetery. I didn't even realize that they'd done that. But I can tell you this. The moment I set foot on Queen Mary, it was like you go through the when you first step onto the ship, after you get off the elevator mm-hmm. and turn left, walk in. I didn't get 10 feet, and I went, oh, my God. You could just feel it. And the story I have is I checked in at the main desk, and I was right around the corner from the main desk in the in room A025, and it was
oh,
a stateroom.
Wow.
Okay. And I went right on in there, and I was just getting in, and I had my key, and this man walks up to me, and I look, and it looks like a purser, and you know, he's dressed in the ship's uniform, and he starts telling me the history of the ship, and I'm looking at him like, okay, I guess this is part of the deal. So I stood there, and I had my, you know, my EVP gear and all my heavy stuff, and I'm standing there, and finally, and it was really fascinating. But I was, you know, I just driven, you know, 8 hours from, you know, Northern California, so I said, hey, thank you so much. And he thanked me, and he stood there, and I opened the door, and he didn't have time to move very far, and I was just going to step back out. I just wanted to throw my stuff down. I throw it down, I turn around and go to come back and look for him to say, hey, thanks for this information. It was really nice meeting you. He's gone. And, I mean, and you know how it is on Queen Mary. I mean, where I was at, there was not enough time for him to get all the way down and around to turn the corner.
No, the hallways are long. You can't get, or somebody
yeah.
can't just disappear.
Yeah. So I ran down to the closest one because I figured, well, he must have scooted like hell to get out of there. I ran down, still had my key in my hand, and I'm looking around going, where'd this guy go? And he wasn't there, you know? And I swear to God, I think I had a run-in with a ghost officer, and he looked real. I mean, he looked flesh and blood. I mean, and you could – it was just – uncanny. I still can't explain. And I never saw anyone else dressed quite like him on staff on the ship. It just
wow.
So you know, whoa. But definitely a very very haunted place. You know, I got an EVP in the Grand Ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's on R deck or M deck. I can't remember which of the two, but. It had this one thing to say, and it was very clear, and it sounded like the voice of Nicolas Cage. This is how clear it was, and it said, "Rumium, absolve me." And we have never been able to figure out what that meant. I mean, it's just this very clear. It's almost like he's speaking part Latin, and we don't understand it. I mean, it just. I don't know, but yeah, it's amazing. We've hunted in the same places, two of the most haunted places there are. You know?
It is funny. I always call the Queen Mary, I lovingly call it the floating coffin, because that's what it feels like to me. I walk in and I'm like, okay, I now have entered death. Like, there's that feeling to it. Like, the whole place, like you said, you just walk in, you're like, all right, the place is haunted. I don't need to investigate. I just know. It's like it just has that kind of feeling to it.
There's so many ghosts aboard. I mean, you could, you know, you go from one place to another, and the characters of the decks change from place to place. It's a
yep.
whole different feeling. Yeah, you know, but the worst was the bulkhead, you know, going down into that storage area. That was just awful. There's no.
I hate it down there.
Yeah. I did too. I felt like it was granted a license to escape, you know, when I got out of there. I mean, the swimming pool was much more fun. You know, that area with where they had the swimming pool below.
I love the swimming pool. The swimming pool area is great.
Yeah. It's just, we got a lot of orbs there. I'm not big on orbs, but it was unusual to see some of the ones we got. It didn't look like dust. It looked like traditional spirit orbs would. And there does seem to be something going on in there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. It is a very interesting. I don't know, the Queen Mary is just interesting all the way around. I've done Frank's Box sessions on it too, and we always, it's just some of the stuff I've gotten there, it fascinates me every time I go.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have run right up to 6 minutes till the end of the show. I feel like I've known you my whole life. It's wow. You know, we got to do this again.
This is such an easy interview. I feel like I'm talking to one of my friends. You know what I mean? Like we're having coffee right now or something.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that, okay, if you say it's your fault, John, for being so good at this. Oh, yeah, right. Anyway, I know that your book's in the mail, and we're going to be taking a look at that, and I'm going to read through it, and we can talk some more. And I'll definitely talk with you again in the very near future, maybe off air. And I'd just like to collaborate with you a little bit. I mean, you know your stuff.
Oh, thanks. I would love to talk to you. That would be great. Let's do some, let's definitely collaborate.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll throw some emails in after the show. And when I see the book here and I'll definitely read that cover to cover real quick and absorb all the wisdom you have to share and all that. And then we'll definitely be talking, but thank you for being gracious on the extension on the, cause everybody was, I feel everybody looking at me going, extend, we really like the show. So, and your website is www.heatherwoodward.net, if I'm correct. And,
yes.
And are you doing any events here in the very near future that you want to share or anything that's coming up?
February 28th, I'm doing the Tucson Psychic Fair. It's TucsonPsychicFair.com. And then I'm going to start doing some book signings here, but not until summertime. But that's it for right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the name of your group that you hunt with?
It's called Peace of Paranormal. It's www.peaceofparanormal.com. You can check that out. You can just go to my website, heatherwoodward.net. You can always email me through that either way. And like I always tell people, feel free to call to email me and just ask me questions. If you have questions about psychic development, if you have questions about anything, always just email me. I email people right back. I'm really good at that. And I expect that if I'm putting myself out there on radio shows and stuff, I expect to help people. So don't think you're inconveniencing me at all.
Okay. Well, we will be staying in touch with you. You are a friend of GRI now, so you're on the official friends list, and I think we're going to be getting to know a bit about each other. So, we just will love having you on the show again. It's just been wonderful. And everybody's
thank you so much.
Everybody's begging me to extend. I can't. I ran out of extensions on it. And I have to share something. I injured my back today, guys. I'm actually been a trooper through this whole thing because I was pushing, trying to save our play that fell in the big snowstorm in December. And the crazy thing is sprouting blooms, and it's laying sideways across my fish pond. So I was trying to lift a 350-pound tree, and I threw my back out. So I'm pretty miserable right now. So I was going to do a show right afterwards do one of my EVP shows, and I'm going to do that tomorrow. I scheduled it for tomorrow, but I am going to go lay down for a little while now. But I've had just a great time. It was worth it. This is a wonderful show. So I would just, thank you so much, Heather. It's just been a marvelous show, and we'll be talking in the very near future.
Awesome. Well, get some rest, and I hope you feel better.
Okay, I will. I'm going to go take some aspirin and go up and check my parents here. But okay, we got less than a minute left. And to everybody out there, God bless. And we're going to be on Thursday. I'll be on with Kathy on Kathy's Distant Echoes. I'll be co-hosting with her with the usual EVP stuff and all the wonderful psychometry things we do and all that. And maybe Heather will listen in. So we'll be doing that. And then the following Sunday, I'll be doing a show. And I do not have my notes for who I'll have, but by gosh, I'll have somebody there. So this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. We're going to be signing off. 25 seconds left. Let's play something really cool here. We'll do the Troops Suspects thing. And then the
Troops is filmed on location with the men of the Imperial Forces. All suspects are guilty, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be suspect, would they?
This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio signing off. Goodbye, everybody.